And now it is my great pleasure and high honor to introduce the man himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Delmer Giese.
All right. A contest to see who introduces the pastor better, and Hannah wins today, and Jamie's back there running sound, and if she really loves Jesus, we thank God that she's running sound. Good morning, everybody. Welcome online. We are so glad you joined us today, because you're going to be glad you came. They said check in online. I came to work the other morning, and Jamie said, did you go on Facebook at 3 o'clock in the morning last night? And I said, yes. And she, because I've been hacked before, and Jamie gets into my account and unhacks me. I don't know how they do that. But I couldn't sleep, so I got up and I went on Facebook and saw my son had posted a picture of him and Ellie, my granddaughter, going golfing, and it was so cute. And so I thought, well, I'll respond to this when I usually don't. And so I hit respond like I think you're supposed to, and I said, how cute. And hit respond, and nothing. So if it didn't work the first time, it'll work the second time. So I hit respond again, nothing, again, nothing, again, nothing. And I decided the internet was broken. And so come to find out, I didn't do it right. And Jamie said I had put Jeff's profile up 4 different times, and she was afraid it was a hack, so she took it down. And so if you're reporting in this morning on however you do, thank you. It would take some of us a while, the rest of the service, to do that. And so anyway, I'm in a series, and I'm calling it Unshakable. And today I want to talk about an important part of this is what I'm calling moral authority. Hebrews 12:28 says, since we've received a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and worship God with reverence and awe. Now, when Jesus came and introduced his kingdom, it was brand new to them. But let me tell you, his kingdom wasn't new. His kingdom's been around since before time began. But he talks to his disciples about, he said, the new government that I'm bringing to the earth is going to be one of, turn the other cheek. And they said, what? It's going to be about going the extra mile. And they said, we've never heard anything like that. It's going to be about loving your enemies and not hating them. And they thought, this is all brand new stuff. But because it was new to them, how many know it wasn't a fledgling kingdom that Jesus is trying to get off the ground? He's explaining how life really does work. And so by the time the writer of Hebrews comes along, he says, we've received a kingdom that cannot be shaken. So let's be thankful and worship God in reverence and awe. And so I think right now we are living in uncertain times. How many of you know that? How many, 6 months ago, teenagers used to throw toilet paper into the yard and over your trees, and now we collect the stuff. How many of you know what I'm talking about? And I think there are people watching. They're watching us. Thank you for watching us online. But not just online and see how the church goes. I think there are people that are important to you are watching you to see how you handle these times of uncertainty. And now, I'm not an opportunist and saying, let's take advantage of these weak times. No, that's not what I'm saying. A lot of people are suffering. There's confusion in all kinds of different places. But we have received an unshakable kingdom. And so since we have, now is the time to take a good, close look at how we as the church of the Lord Jesus Christ function, how we believe, what we do, and all of those kinds of things. And so, and the truth of it is, none of us leaders know what we're doing. How many of you know that? Some of you knew that already. Pastor, we knew that a long time ago, and it didn't take the coronavirus to explain to us that you don't know what you're doing, but especially not now. How many know I never took a class in college or in Bible school about what to do when the pandemic hits? There were no classes offered. To mask or not to mask? That it seems to be the question. And really and truly, we're not going there today, but to open school or not open school. Our governing board of our Leading Edge Academy has decided to open school starting tomorrow, and so we're happy for that. And so leadership now, guys, is not, you clap, give me a month to make sure you're clapping, or you'll come and visit me in jail. That's what I'm saying. No. Just teasing. But the truth of it is, leadership right now is not for the faint of heart, especially in these uncertain times. But in uncertain times, what's your family? What the world needs is leadership. When things get tough, I tell you, when things are easy, I tell you, when the kids are happy and everybody's just flowing. I mean, you know, leadership is relatively easy at that point. When things are tough, that's when real leadership, I don't think it's grown there. I just think it's revealed there. And so in these uncertain times like we're in now, leadership is huge. To repeat a little bit from last week, Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, our Old Testament story guys last week, would both agree that the God of heaven rules. See, Nebuchadnezzar was this, he was the most powerful man in the world. He was the king of Babylon, and I'm telling you, he went in and just ran over Judah, took Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, took all kinds of guys captive, later came back and just destroyed the city of Jerusalem, burned the temple, and took all the gold out of it, and just did terrible things. And the truth of it is, he thought he was hot stuff. Ah, I'm the king, king of Babylon, one of the seven ancient wonders of the world were the hanging gardens of Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar had built, and he was intoxicated with his own success and thought he was really something, and the truth of it is, God gave it to him. I've talked to people who are incredibly successful, and they think they're really hot stuff, and the truth of it is, they're just dumb lucky. Somebody said, don't you got to write a book? And I say, what, I'm being lucky? Because I was standing at the right place at the right time? No. Standing with both feet on the ground? No. It's just luck. And Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, learned that God is the God of heavens. And God says, you think you're so good, Nebuchadnezzar? I'll tell you what, you're going to go crazy. You're going to lose your mind. You're going to act like an animal. You're going to eat grass like a cow does until you understand that you don't rule, but God rules. And so Nebuchadnezzar learned that. And so I'm trying to understand that. Now see, not globally. Revelations 11:15 says, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever. How many know that's global? God says, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do it with or without you, Delmer, and I'm going to do that someday the kingdoms of this world will become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ. Now, that's going to happen. I'm not concerned about the global issues. I'm concerned about the local issues in my own heart. That the kingdoms of this world, not out there, right inside here, would become the kingdoms of my God and of his Christ. And he would reign out there for sure. But that's not my focus, guys. My focus is that Jesus would reign right here, right inside my own heart. That's where the issue seems to be. Nebuchadnezzar did not understand. You have is given to you by God. And God says, let's see how you're going to do with that. Let's see what you do with this leadership. Are you a good steward of that? Did you help folks? Did you do what you're supposed to do with it, with your money? Because someday it all belongs to God, and someday, takes me to my second point in that sentence, it's temporary. It's going to go away. Leadership has an expiration date on it, that it'll be either taken or given away. I want to be able to give mine away because it doesn't last forever. Some people think they're going to live forever. Isn't that silly? Nobody ever does. And it is, and we are accountable to God. We are under scrutiny. Not by God looking to see what we've done wrong. God is watching. When no one else is watching, God is watching to see what I'm going to do with whatever it is I have and with whatever it is I influence. So I want to talk to us about that for a while this morning. Basic authority operates on two levels. And excuse me. And I call them positional authority or moral authority. And positional authority is the someone, a boss, a parent, or somebody that has authority over you for a specific time and place. How many know when the policeman pulls you over and you see his badge, he has authority over you at that time, and you're hoping that he won't write you a ticket or excuse me, this corona just can't get rid of it. Just teasing. Oh, man. Anymore. Mere jokes get turned into lawsuits very quickly. I mean, the policeman has authority for that time, for that moment. He's not going to go home with you and check your personal hygiene. How many of you know policemen don't do that? It's while he's got you there, or the stripes, you know, military. That's positional authority, and we need it. Nobody's against that kind of stuff. Everybody, there's a place for that, but it's for a limited period of time. It's in a specific context. However, moral authority, it may not be your boss at all. It may not be someone in positional authority over you at all. It may be just someone you look to in a variety of contexts. Maybe the guy that you think is so good with money doesn't even have a degree in accounting, never even been to college, Sam Walton, but he can certainly knows how to make a dollar. And so he's got moral authority in that area, maybe not in other areas, but the people have moral authority in some areas because of what they, because what they say they do. And so you trust them. You respect them. And I think especially now, it's beyond the title. It builds trust, respect, and influence. And we are easily influenced by people we respect. How many of you know a parent with a drug problem, maybe an alcohol problem, if they're addicted to alcohol or drugs or something, and it's hard for them to get on their child and say, I want you not to be vaping anymore because that's harmful to you. How many of you know that 14, 15-year-old kid is going to look at them and say, excuse me? You're a drug addict. You've been smoking weed for the last 40 years, smoking up your life, and you're telling me not to vape. How many of you know that parent in that arena would not have much moral authority to speak to anybody about anything, especially their children, because respect isn't there? So I want to talk to you this morning briefly about a guy in the Old Testament that had huge credibility, huge moral authority, and his name was Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah finds himself as the personal assistant. They called him the cupbearer. They could have called him the butler, but the personal assistant to King Artaxerxes, who was the king of the Persian Empire. And so what had happened is the children of Israel were under Babylonian captivity. Belshazzar dies. We mentioned him. Cyrus the Great comes in, and he says, okay, all of you that want to go home can, but those of you that want to stay can. And so it had been 100 years or so, and so these people didn't want to go back to Israel. The children didn't have any tie there. So they said, we've got our homes here, we've got our vineyards here, let's just stay in Persia and we'll be Persian citizens. And so, okay, so some went, some didn't. And so Nehemiah's family are part of the ones that didn't go. So Nehemiah moves up the ranks in Artaxerxes' little kingdom there. And so one day he's there to serve the king, and this Nehemiah is depressed and he's sad. And Artaxerxes says, Nehemiah, what's the matter? And he says, you know, the homeland of my people, it's just a mess. They don't have any walls. The walls are broken down. The gates are burned with fire. And the enemy of the people just run over them all the time. And so Artaxerxes says, wow, I'm so sad, Nehemiah, for you. Is there anything I can do to help? And so Nehemiah says, could you send me back for a while? And the king says, sure. And then he says, anything else? He said, well, I could use some money. And the king says, sure. So he agreed, and he funded this whole deal, and he says, I'll tell you what, Nehemiah, why don't you go back, and you get the wall built up and all those kind of things that you think you need, and you be the governor of Judah during that time, and so just go back, and I'll send you money, I'll send you people, I'll send you materials, all that kind of stuff, to make sure you can get done what you need done. So Nehemiah goes back, and most of us that have heard of Nehemiah, who sat through Sunday school, one of my long series about Nehemiah on rebuilding the wall of the human personality, Nehemiah goes back, and the first thing he does, and what he's famous for, is rebuilding the wall. Man, he just does a great job. He, you know, musters everybody together, and they get that wall built, and they get it back into place, and so now the wall's in place, the authority is there, and all this kind of stuff, but there's still problems. And it takes Nehemiah a while, and so Nehemiah starts to sort these things out. The people are still having lots of problems. And so Nehemiah is no dummy. Now, I hate to say this, but what Nehemiah did, he followed the money. When there's problems, you follow the money. This is not new stuff. Nehemiah did that. And so when there's problems in the people, Nehemiah says, what's going on here? So when Nehemiah got to Jerusalem and started helping these people, he realized not only does the wall need to be rebuilt, but these people had been taken advantage of by the Gentiles around them, and they were in utter poverty. And so what these Gentile warlords did, they loaned them huge sums of money at exorbitant interest rate and made virtual slaves out of these Jewish people, and they're trying to be in the city of their God and all that kind of stuff. So Nehemiah comes into the city and realizes what happened. So he, with his personal money, buys everybody out of slavery, pays off their debt. Says, this can't be. And so he had some money from somewhere, and so he buys everybody out of slavery. So you think, wow, got that fixed. And then what happened? These people fell right into it, only with each other. Not only were the Gentiles selling them into slavery, the Jewish brothers were selling their brothers into slavery. And so Nehemiah, it takes him a while to dawn on him that all this is going on. So he finally hears about this, and good old Nehemiah is not happy at all. Takes me to the book of Nehemiah, chapter 5 and verse 6. Are you still with me this morning? Okay, just wanted to make sure. Because once you sit back in that recliner, it's easy to go right back to sleep. And just stay with me here. Verse 6. When I heard their outcry, Nehemiah says, and these charges, I was very angry. He said, that makes me so mad that these Jewish people were selling each other. One thing to have the enemy sell you, that's kind of understood. But when these Jewish brothers were selling each other, he said, this is nuts. Verse 7, I pondered them in my mind. And then I accused the nobles and officials. I told them, you are charging your own people interest. So I called together a large meeting to deal with them. He says, it dawned on me what's going on. It made me really mad. So I called them all together, had this large meeting. And I said, you people are charging them interest. And you know better than that. Verse 8. I said, as far as possible, we have brought back our fellow Jews who were sold to the Gentiles. He said, when I got here, all these Jewish brothers were sold to the Gentiles, and we bought them back with our own money. We shelled out a lot of cash for this. We brought them back, and the rest of verse 8, now you're selling your own people only to be sold back to us? He said, what in the world? You selling your own people? And look at the end of verse 8, he says, they kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. How many of you know Nehemiah just shut them up? Who remembers as a child? Maybe your parents, maybe somebody just nailed you and you couldn't say one thing. Shut my mouth. That's what he did. So Nehemiah says, you have what you eat. He says, they have nothing to say. No kidding. So Nehemiah's on a roll. Now envision this. I mean, this is not to envision this. Verse 9. So I continued. In the fear of God, how can you do this and say that you fear the Lord? To avoid the reproach of our Gentile enemies. He said, you guys, they're laughing at us. They're making sport of us. They said, they're not even keeping their own law. They're selling each other into slavery. And he said, the Gentiles are laughing at us. Verse 10, I and my brothers and my men are also lending money, the people money and grain, but let us stop charging interest. See, the Old Testament law encouraged Jewish people to loan money to other Jewish people, to their brothers and sisters, to the poor. He said, loan them money, but you can't charge interest on it. And you can't take for collateral things that are really valuable, like their work animals, like their land. That land was sacred. You can't take that. He said, but you can charge them. You can charge them. Just don't charge. You can loan them. Just don't charge any interest and don't take things real collateral. Verse 11. Give them back their fields, vineyards, olive groves, houses, and also the interest you're charging them. He said, give it back and give it back now. Woo! Nehemiah, they're going to smack you down. And here's what they say. We will give it back, they said. Who's got seven? Who has 7-year-old children? You tell what to do, and they'll argue with you. 14, 15-year-old kid wants you to do this. Rah, 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 rah. And these rich nobles, they will give it back, they said. And we will not demand any more from them. We will do as you say. Now, Nehemiah's no fool. Ronald Reagan didn't make it up. Ronald Reagan made it famous. Trust and verify. Nehemiah probably heard Reagan in an old videotape that he had. So Nehemiah says, yeah. We're going to do it. Boy, Nehemiah, I'll tell you what, we're going to do that. And so here's what he does. Then I summons the priest and made the nobles and the officials take an oath to do what they promised. He says, I'll trust you, but we're going to do this publicly. And as it were, we're going to get it in writing. We're not just going to believe you're going to do it. We're going to get it. Everybody's going to be watching this. Just like when you got married. God was watching, but everybody else was too. So you just can't run off somewhere because not only God, but everybody else that was there, they'll come after you too. And so, verse 13, Nehemiah also shook out the folds of, Nehemiah said, I also shook out the folds of my robe and said, in this way may God shake out their houses and possessions, anyone who does not keep this promise. So may such a person be shaken out and emptied. And the people did as they promised. Nehemiah did one of these, had these big robes on. And he stands up and he shakes it out and he dusts or lunch that might have been caught in the robes. He says, and as I shake this out, this is what I'm asking God to do to you, to shake you out if you don't do what you've promised. And we think, whoa, Nehemiah had something under the hood. Now that's gravitas. That would be enviable to have that kind of firepower to walk into a room full of nobles. This is not a bunch of little kids, full of nobles, and speak to them and have them respond. To say that Nehemiah had moral authority is an understatement. And so you say, well, Pastor, that's what the Bible is, because Bible stories, you get to tell Bible stories, and that's how it was. The prophet gets up there. And so you would think, but there's a backstory. When I hear the story, I'm always looking for the backstory. Because a lot of guys like to tell the story. I want to know the backstory. And there's a backstory to Nehemiah. How in the world he got this kind of gravitas, this kind of powerhouse. It goes on in verse 14. He says, moreover, when I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, 12 years ago, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. See, when he went down there as a governor, Nehemiah had the right to levy taxes and take money, basically as much as he wanted to. And he says, when we got here, we did not, 12 years ago, neither I or my brothers ate the allotted food to the governor. He could have gotten free food, but he never exercised this entitlement for 12 long years. And then he goes on to say, verse 15, but the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver, a fortune. He says, the governors before, man, they levied taxes and they took it all. Plus they got all their free food and the free wine from the vineyards. These guys took whatever they want to. And their assistants also lorded it over the people. See, he says, not only before did the governors come in, the leaders, and they took advantage of these people, but also their assistants did. You find corruption at the top, and you're going to find everybody else underneath corrupt too. How many of you know that? Because, no offense, it is monkey see, monkey do. And so that's where this kind of stuff comes from. And Nehemiah says, we didn't do that. Verse 15, but out of reverence for God. It's not that Nehemiah was afraid, oh, I don't want to make anybody unhappy. He said, no. He says, we're accountable to God here. Out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Instead, I devoted myself to the work on the wall. He said, we came to Jerusalem to build this wall. All my men were assembled with me there for the work, and we didn't acquire any land. See, they could have taken land. And in those days, if you owned land, you had power. And the really powerful people of the world were the landowners. And Nehemiah says, we didn't take any land. God's not against you owning land today. No. That's for then, for that time, it was a law for then. And so Nehemiah says, we did not enrich ourselves on your backs. He said, for 12 years, we paid our own way. And my men did too. Verse 18, I never demanded the food allotment to the governor because the demands were heavy on these people. He said these people had enough problems, much less giving me and all my guys free food, free wine, a huge allotment of taxes. He said it would have been too heavy on the people. That's where Nehemiah got his moral authority to walk into a room full of nobles and say, knock it off, what you're doing is so wrong. Because for 12 years, he had established his authority as one that cared for people, one that cared for the people he was trying to govern. See, and I think moral authority takes years to acquire. Sometimes people try to get it with a degree, with one act, with one bit of success. Nehemiah did. It was years to acquire, and the truth of it is it can be lost with one stupid misstep. Trust is earned. Trust is influence. Our respect for our parents, or whatever leaders you respect, is not because of what they required of you, but what they required of themselves. I don't respect my parents because they made me this, that, and the other. I had deep respect for my parents because of what they expected of themselves. Not do as I say, but do as I do. Not just do this and I'm not going to. Having other people do what you won't do. You think because you're the chief guy, the chief gal, office manager, assembly line manager, whatever it is, you think you can do that. And you really lose influence. And then you resort to using your position. You resort to power grabs. You resort to voice elevations. You resort to threats. All kinds of things because you don't have any moral authority, and the people watching you desperately need for you to have some. See, our lives speak louder than our words. Our lives add weight to our words. That's what moral authority is. Well, you don't have to prove everything you say. Some kind of empirical science. No. With what you said is believed. Because of who says it. And I think the world, our culture, desperately needs somebody with the moral authority, speaks the truth. So, how do you know? Everybody thinks they've got it. Everybody's sure. If I ask, oh yeah, we got that. Boy, my kids, they really follow me. How do you know if you got it? Three little things, right in your bulletin there. Number one, pay close attention to your internal and external response to authority. Well, Pastor, I just don't like to be told what to do. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought everybody loved to be told what to do. And they're not going to tell me. Okay, I'm good for you. You go fight that every day of your life. I'm asking you, this is not a judgment, we're going to check off questions. I'm asking you to measure your internal response to authority. See, I think if you consider yourselves too important to be under authority, you're probably too immature to be over. Paul said, take heed to yourself. That's what I'm asking. I'm not doing a check off the thing here. Ask yourself, what is your internal response when you're told what to do? I think you could be on a slippery slope. Well, Pastor, they're idiots. They don't know anything. Probably are, and you're the only smart person in the world. That's what I've always said. Aren't you glad you tuned in today? Telling you, even if you're not catching it on Sunday, sometime during this week, this is exactly when you needed this. Number two, pay close attention to your sense of entitlement. Pay attention to the tension. Listen to yourself and the excuses you make to justify your behavior. Imagine in your mind, if you would, what kind of advice you would give to somebody who you believe has moral authority on what they ought to do if they're in the same situation you are. What would you tell them that they should do? See, I pay close attention to your sense of, I deserve it. I've earned it. They don't know what I've done for this, them, my family, whatever. They don't, I deserve it. I'm not saying you don't. I'm not saying you haven't earned it. But I don't want to do anything that's going to hurt my moral authority with you. With you. With my own family. With my own children. With unchurched people. I just would not do that. The old adage is never do or say anything you wouldn't want printed. It used to be that you wouldn't want to go to the newspapers, but people don't do the papers anymore. Social media. Anybody around long enough to know they'll get you if they can. People think, oh, poor pastor, he doesn't have enough smarts to get on social media. Think what you want to, but I know where to stay away from. Okay, are you with me so far? Now I'm going to wrap it up. Pay attention to your imaginary conversations, and we all have them. To those imaginary frustrations, and where you're sitting, not to yourself, I know you wouldn't speak this out loud because you're much brighter than that, but on the inside, you're so angry and you're saying, boy, rah, 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 and on and on and on it goes. And I'm telling you what, guys, it just takes one leak to shoot your moral authority. And things that were gone, that were worked on for years, because that is a slippery slope. See, entitlement is a slippery slope. I've earned it. It's my right. No one can tell me. It's really not that illegal. Everybody does this kind of thing. And so you do it, and you can't get back, I think, what it costs you. When you do mess up, fess up. We trust people who make mistakes. We don't trust people who make excuses. Because the truth of it is, they've got their own best interest in mind. People make excuses, don't care about you. They care about covering their backside. Jim, come on up. We're going to wrap it up. See, moral authority is that you can lead without it. The truth of it is, you can lead without it. But you will not be a leader worth following without it. You might have enough money. You might have enough prestige. You might have enough something that you can lead without it. But the God's truth is, you won't be a leader worth following without it. Read the other day that people are usually defined by their final chapter, not their finest chapter. We've been around long enough, I have anyway. Just happened this last week or so. President of the second largest nonprofit Christian university in the nation was just asked to step down over stupid, irresponsible photos that were taken of him. Something his father had worked for generations to build Liberty University. huge work of God going on there. And then Jerry Jr. made a stupid post, and the leadership asked him to step down. And I'm not here to argue whether they should or shouldn't, but I'm telling you, in a moment of foolishness, he lost the moral authority that he once carried, and that will be no more. So I think moral authority is number one. I think you can't replace that. And then during times like this, and I'll talk about it next week, I think clarity is the issue. Okay, Delmer, what are we going to do? And again, I'm not talking globally. Well, I'll tell you what they need to do. They need to this and they need to that. No. Get your head out of the clouds. Come to where you live with your little family, with your little children, with your little business, with your little church. Kids, here's what we're going to do. Husband and wife, here's what we're going to do. Clarity. Not globally, locally. We've all got an opinion of what ought to happen globally. Sure, have one. You can have three or four if you like. But I'm not talking globally. Because I think a lot of folks lose it when they get so big that it's out of their head. But locally, your own life, your own family, for clarity. And I'll talk to us about Life Community Church. This is not a leading edge thing. This is a Life Community Church thing. I am primarily a pastor. And I want to talk to us about local clarity and what Jesus wants us to do. To be here, great. If not, be sure to tune in online. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you, Lord, for the strength and power you give to these people. Lord, thank you for the people that are looking to all of us. Not just me as a pastor, but Lord, our families who are taking their cues from us in frustration and anger. In frustration and rebellion. Lord, not wanting just to be sheep that are led to the slaughter. Lord, how are we to exercise moral authority in uncertain times like this? Help us, Lord. I pray that in Jesus' strong name, amen. Guys, let's stand. Jim, lead us, please.